Your Partner in Success Radio is a free business podcast with host Denise Griffiths. It's all about great stories, conversation, and context to help you move your business and life forward with actionable tips and advice from her guest experts. To listen and subscribe, just find us on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you consume your podcasts.
Welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. What are some of the qualities of a high-performance culture? I'm going to ask my guest that in just a few minutes. So I'm your host, Denise Griffiths, and today I welcome to the show President, CEO, and Chief Culture Officer for Ideal Outcomes, Inc., and author of Culture Spark, Five Steps to Ignite and Sustain Organizational Growth, Jason Richmond. Let's try that again. And in-demand keynote speaker. Oh, geez. Jason is an authoritative culture change consultant who has helped companies build strong, sustained revenue growth by empowering their employees and developing energizing office cultures. Now, during his career of more than 20 years, Jason has partnered with numerous startup companies to help build solid foundations that have enabled them to become noted industry leaders. He has worked closely with established Fortune 100 companies to create leadership development journeys. I love that. Leadership development journeys. And he has provided thought leadership and innovative consulting services to quite a wide range of mid-sized companies. So in this conversation, I asked him to share with us an awful lot of information. So I'm going to ask him why culture is important. What are some myths about culture? What are the qualities of a high-performance culture, which I mentioned earlier? And let's talk about some common culture mistakes and how to overcome them. Jason, welcome to Your Partner in Success Radio. It's good to have you here.
Yeah, thank you, Denise. I certainly appreciate the time and the opportunity to speak with you and your audience today.
Oh, thank you. You sent me your book. I have it on my desk. I've got it open. Great. There's a cat sitting on it, but I've got it open. And it's a really great book because culture, and we're not talking about culture in terms of, you know, people and groups of people. We're talking about corporate culture, business culture, team culture, how you treat the people who work with you, for you, around you. So before I get, you know, really going on this, tell the audience a bit about yourself that I may not have mentioned, and then let's just rock and roll this thing.
Well, again, Denise, thank you for the opportunity to speaking with you today. I you know, when people ask me, you know, did you know you a little bit? I mean, I'm kind of an open book, and I'm an entrepreneurial spirit. I believe in the power of people and the power of teams. I think any organization's success is ultimately built on the people that they bring together, get involved, nurture, empower, and let them strive. I'm a little bit of an adrenaline kind of guy. I'm very active. I love the outdoors. I love activity, but it ultimately, I'm a big believer in life balance and making sure you always do the right thing for the other person. I mean, it's, you know, I live in other people's shoes, if you will, and try to make sure I live my life trying to see things from other people's point of view.
And that is, I couldn't have explained the way I feel about life and business any better than that. I mean, that's perfect.
So.
Excellent. Except I'm not a junkie. Adrenaline. My idea of really.
I love the outdoor activity from flying airplanes to scuba diving. Oh. I mean, it's you know, I love that the challenging activities of life, really.
Me too. From a good book. I can imagine anything, but I live in the deep, deep South. It is hot. We have two seasons, hot and hotter than hell. And right now we've got the mud season rolled into the hotter than hell part. And I can't go outside without being pretty convinced I'm going to die. It's just too hot out there. You can't breathe. And then, of course, everybody says, put a mask on. No. Go away. No. I'm not going to wear a mask. I can't breathe now. No. It's crazy. So listen, this. Mm-hmm. What started you? Well, tell me a bit about your business first, because what you're talking about, when you're talking about culture and you're talking about a change consultant, that's pretty important. And you said something earlier about empowering employees. And is that something new? Because on the rare occasion when I have worked in somebody's else's office, that was never the case. And I'm a run with scissors kind of gal. You do not want me in your office. Trust me. And if you're going to be hanging over my shoulder, you know, playing with the change in your pocket, somebody's going to get hurt. You know, that's not energizing and that's not helpful. Do you see that that's changing? I hope.
I believe that, and I have seen, and I've worked with hundreds of thousands of organizations, that especially in that leadership rank, that front, that middle management, that front level management, the difference between, one of the differences between really high effective leadership styles and tendencies is that level of empowering and trusting their people. I believe the old you know, thumb on the desktop micromanager in today's workforce is a dinosaur, and companies that want to lead and manage that way and individuals that want to lead and manage that way are going to find themselves with turnover, retention issues, commitment levels within their staff, and going to create a check the box types of culture. Instead of a culture that is dynamic, empowering, thought leadership based, idea provoking, et cetera. And I don't think, you know, empowering your employees is a new concept. It's a hard concept. And it's at an individual level, just as much as it's at an organizational level. And individual leaders not have to have that comfort level of having the right people to empower them to do their job, to bring value to the organization. Still with me?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I had muted you and then just kept on talking. So, sorry about that. It's Friday, right? What I was saying, if I can remember what I was saying now, is in the green room, my virtual green room, where we were speaking a few minutes ago before I opened up the show, we were both talking about how we have remote teams. You know, all of our people work somewhere other than with us physically, and it works very, very well. Of course, with me, there was some stages that I had to go through where I didn't have to micromanage, where I couldn't micromanage. It made no sense to micromanage. And I finally had to figure out that in certain aspects of my team, you know, I do a lot of techie work, WordPress, you know, a lot of stuff I do is very, very technical. And I found out the hard way, honestly, that I needed to hire people who were better at something than I am. I mean, I have to have a working knowledge of what I'm asking them to do, requiring them to do. But I also have to trust that they know what the heck they're doing and can actually advise me. Are you finding that in today's kind of new remote work type of situation?
Every day. I think powerful cultures, powerful, successful organizations, small companies, mid-sized companies, and beyond. I think when it comes to recruiting, recruiting talent and retaining talent, you know, individuals need to be challenged, and they need to have multiple purposes to get up in the morning, right? And to be passionate about something, and hiring the type of people on your teams and around you that bring a higher level of skill set and knowledge, I think is the key to that. Because every day my employees can come to the table and actually teach me something. And you know, it takes a strong leader to be able to check their ego and realize that they're in a leadership position driving a charge, but they're depending on talented people, more talented than them in certain areas. And to me, I think that's kind of a through line of all successful entrepreneurs. Entrepreneurs out there across the world, you know, they're passionate about business, they're passionate about growth, they're passionate about change, they're passionate about challenges, but they're not subject matter experts in everything. And in order to bring some of their ideas to success and to actually function, they're going to be required to bring in highly talented people, a lot smarter or skilled in certain areas than they are.
Oh, absolutely. I think solopreneurs are really finding this out. I did, as a solopreneur. I think to me there's a difference between a solopreneur and an entrepreneur. I'm probably a little bit of both, but more a solopreneur, meaning that I own it, I'm responsible for it, I pay for it, it's me, it's all me. But I had to really grow up and say, I can't tell people what to do. I have to actually bring them in, give them enough of a big picture so they can go, oh, well, you know, Denise, there's a better way to do this. Or what do you think about this? Let me tell you, it hurt my feelings that when I realized that I was not the smartest person in the darn room.
Yep.
Darn it. Even though I'm the only person in the room, you know, I made it a point after a while to really empower my team. Many of, you know, some of them have been with me 10 years or better. Never met them. Never will. And it works, but I had to give up my ego to some degree.
Yeah.
That's smarting.
You do.
That was hard work.
Yeah, and a lot of people ask me, well, how do you do that? How do you engage, or how do you get people to bring their best to the table? And it's not, it doesn't have to be complicated or expensive. I mean, simple tips like, and something I do with my team all the time is I put out a business challenge. And, you know, we have constant weekly calls in our Zoom meetings, just like every company's doing, every department's doing, every team is doing, staying in touch and having communications. But instead of just the reporting out and providing the updates and talking about the day-to-day, you know, throw out a business challenge and prep your people and say, come prepared to bring some solution ideas to this next meeting about this. And it really pushes to bring the best out of people. And that's just such a simple thing, really hard to think about sometimes, or it's not made a priority. But you'll start seeing certain people rise to the top if you give them the opportunity to.
Oh, absolutely. And not only that, but it gives them the opportunity to kind of compete a little bit, friendly competition,
yep,
with each other, which is always good. And then, you know, more ideas will pop up from that. You may be 2 weeks down the road and somebody says, hey, remember when we talked about this 2 weeks ago? I have an idea. Sometimes it has to percolate. So that's a fantastic idea. So what else do you suggest? Oh, before I get started with that thought, you and I are both solopreneurs, entrepreneurs, but what happens when, you know, let's just say an insurance company, you know, they're used to being in-house, they're used to being in their office or their satellite office, or, you know, I have one client that has multiple offices. Things have now changed a bit where they're having to do a little bit more remote work. And thank goodness my client is not authoritative, and she is willing to work with everybody as best as she can. But even she is having some difficulties because it's such a departure from the way everything has been done. So are you coming across people who are just in that particular culture shock? Like, hey, I'm used to walking down the hall and saying, hey, Billy Bob, I need you to go do this. And Billy Bob goes and does it. In your dreams, that would happen. But you know what I mean.
Exactly. I am coming across it, and I've been having a lot of conversations lately about the importance of, you know, with the distance now, with the remote workforce, with the inability to walk down the hall or stick your head into someone's cubicle, with that being non-existent today, you almost have to be deliberate about making a point to, you know, ask a couple questions that you maybe not would have asked. Ask, you know, try to get to know a person at a different level. You know, ask them more of a, you know, a personal question to try to get to understand who that person really is. Where in an office, you know, you can read body language and you can read emotion and you can see the person, and some of those conversations happen at the water cooler or automatic just because of proximity. But now you don't. And we don't really, you know, to be honest, we don't really have a crystal ball to really understand the distractions that your employees are having at home, the situations that they're dealing with. I'm working from home now in my office and my refrigerator goes out. That's a distraction. And that's not a distraction that necessarily lived there when they were all in the office. But to really take an extra step and an extra moment to understand who your people really are, what motivates them, what inspires them, take interest in them. And that helps close that gap. And again, it sounds like a very simple thing to do, but it's a very difficult thing to do. People make the assumption that it's time consuming. I don't have time to do all that. It's not adding time to what you do. It's just changing. It's just tweaking the way you're communicating and outreaching and staying in contact with your people.
Exactly. And I'm reading so much now because I'm fascinated by how people are doing what I've kind of always done. So it was easy for me. I didn't know anything different. And then I'm watching people who are really struggling, having to work from home or having to boss from home. And it seems to me, Jason, that they're making an awful lot of, you know, much ado about nothing. It just seems to me.
Yeah.
I mean, and I could be wrong, but I'm watching some of the things that pop up. I'm like, really? That's a problem? Yeah. And then I'm watching other people who are complaining bitterly that their bosses are just nickel and diming them to death. They want to know where they are. What time did they take a lunch break? What time did they take a bathroom break? Trust me, I could be 500 miles away from you and still send a curse your way. I would. I would hex you. No, the answer is don't nickel and dime me to death. So what do you tell people who this is, and this is happening? There's an awful lot of chat about it online. So how do you help bosses, team leaders, you know, just kind of relax a bit and let their people rise to the top?
Well, and I think we've been talking a little bit about that so far and a lot of little changes. First of all, to come to the realization that there's a high majority. I mean, if you're leading people that way and that is your best practice or your management style, you probably have a high percentage of people on your teams that might be looking for other employment. It's easier to do that when they're working from home, right? So there's a higher level of importance to really stay connected. And again, focus that leadership style on outcomes and performance and results rather than task and activities in a checklist. Making that mental shift in your leadership style of saying, you know, all these little tasks and everything, what do they really produce? In my book, I talk a lot about one of the steps in my culture change model is really taking a look at policies and procedures and really tweaking those policies and procedures if they're not relevant today. And I challenge leaders and managers now that if they've got a simple policy and procedure that they've used for years before this pandemic and before a remote workforce, you might want to review that and update that or tweak that because it might not be relevant in today's world. And even stepping back and really looking at, you know, realizing that we can't do business the same way we used to do it. That's gone. It's insanity if we think we're going to get the same results if we continually do things the same way we've always done them.
And there's the HR issue. You know, people are not really speaking about this, but, you know, there's my attitude is there's always going to be that one or two or 10 people who are crummy employees in the office, and they're going to show up as really crummy employees online. It's just going to be easier to figure out who they are and what they're not doing. So yeah. HR comes into play at that point, doesn't it? I mean, you have to have a whole revised human resource process going on.
Yeah, it absolutely can in certain situations. I mean, that's another whole large conversation of HR involvement on remote workforces. But you know, if you're going to get into some policies and procedures, that kind of involvement and engagement with them, I think, is a critical piece to that.
Could be. Do you have any kind of case studies that you can share about policies and procedures, like anything recent that comes to mind where somebody had to just completely say, okay, that worked before, maybe it worked before, it's definitely not working now, so how do we fix this?
Well, I just think like rotating schedules. The process of rotating, you know, when you're all in an office and you're all in the same room and everything else, but you know, rotating, you know, breaks and off time and schedules and things like that. Well, we still might have to have that concept, but it might have to be done a little bit differently, because we're not, you know, we can't look across the room and see if someone's sitting at their desk or not. You know, that would be an example of a policy or procedure that I would probably, you know, tweak or review. I'm just off my head. That one just popped to mind, Denise. As we talk, I might come up with one or two more.
Okay. Well, it just popped into my head too. So we're not following a track here. We're having a conversation. So what I want to know, we talked about this at the top of the show. What are the qualities? Do you have a quick list or just a quick description, the qualities of a high-performance culture? Because most cultures think they're working just fine. They're clocking along. Everything is going the way it ought to until it's not. So are the qualities of a culture that just everything is working fine?
Yeah, you know, my book, Culture Spark, was built on an awful lot of research, and I one-on-one interviewed hundreds of executives from all different industries, different sectors, different company sizes, and I quite often get that same question asked of me. You know, what was some of those common themes of really successful cultures? And I narrowed it down to two pretty simple concepts, but also difficult to implement. And one is authenticity. And that intimate level of authenticity and being authentic with your people and your teams and your organization and your community, in your communications and your actions and your behaviors. I think taking an authentic approach to your organizational culture, to build your teams, to be your true self within your leadership styles and your own skin, I think today is probably more important than anything in regards to organizational culture and team dynamics. The other thing is transparent. Now, I understand leaders can't share everything and communicate everything and open their books, and you know, you can over communicate, and there's things you don't communicate to certain levels of an organization. But be very honest and transparent in your communication. I think transparency is the second quality of high performing cultures. Right? The answer, we don't do it that way, or we've never done it that way before, or none of your business, are not acceptable, transparent answers in today's workforce. And that level of honesty and transparency in our communication, I think, is a critical factor also. So I really talk a lot about authenticity and transparency in how we work and deal and communicate.
And here's the thing, too, and this just popped into my head. These days, everybody's got a keyboard. Most people have no filters. Yeah. They're going to talk about whatever is going on in their life, in their family, at the veterinarians. They're going to talk about it. So if you are, and again, I've been watching a lot of I read the news. I do not watch the news. I don't have cable, and I will never have cable again. I want that clear. But if you are watching online, you know, some of these companies are, no, we're fine. And then all of a sudden they're folding, and thousands of people have just been kind of tossed out. There was no transparency there. These people didn't see it coming, and they are hot. I don't blame them. I don't blame them at all. You know, give, if you're going to have to cut 1,000 jobs or 10 jobs, let people, you know, find something else to do. Give them a little bit of time. And when you know you're going to move, you go get the moving boxes. You hire the trucker to come get you. You make plans. These people are not given the opportunity to make plans.
Yeah. And that's a perfect example of, you know, that level of transparency and openness and, you know, being your true self and not as just an individual, but a company. A company can be its true self too. And that also spills into, you know, our community citizenship. I mean, we have to be a citizen of our community and we have to have, you know, our internal culture has to be reflected in our community. And it's just being a good corporate citizen. It's helped supporting, you know, causes, you know, right now, and we're dealing with it. Everybody's dealing with it. Everything's going on in our external environments are getting brought into the workplace, whether it's a remote workplace or you're back in your offices. And as a corporation and a corporate culture, you have to be adapting and open and ready to be authentic. You know, about our world right now and how that's coming into our workplace and be inclusive, create a sense of belonging, right? Be adaptive. I mean, those types of things are behavioral change that a lot of leaders haven't had to do in a long time. We got to get those skill sets ingrained in people again.
I agree with you. So, again, my head is just popping these little weird little thought bubbles, and I'm just asking them. So I have no rhyme or reason. I'm just listening to you, and you know these great questions kind of pop up. But I guess you're a consultant. I'm wondering if people like you, who are culture change consultants and coaches, business coaches, are going to rapidly grow their businesses, because I suspect that a lot of management, middle management, small companies, big companies are in, you know, need of a consultant who is probably a psychologist, psychiatrist. I don't know what they are. I was looking for a WordPress psychiatrist this morning. I kid you not. I really thought I needed to find one. But I mean, I'm joking, but yeah, there was a point where I was like, can't somebody help me? I finally figured it out on my own. But I'm wondering if this is, because there's a lot of growth opportunities happening right now because of all these very rapid, very far-reaching changes that are going on across the world. So it just occurs to me that anybody who can do the kind of work you do and it can help companies and help individuals is probably going to become very, very busy. What do you think?
Well, and we have. I mean, we're staying very consistent. Matter of fact, we are expanding. Our organization is growing. We're looking at, you know, adding more talent to our organization. This is a critical time of the world. This is a critical time in our economy. This is a critical time for a level of leaders within companies to take that next step. And whether that be, you know, one-on-one coaching or departmental coaching or organizational strategy around culture, whatever level that culture, if it's for a company or if it's for a subculture in a division, yeah, we're getting inquiries about that. And we are, you know, working with what we refer to when we work with an internal company. We like to recommend or help select or put together what we call culture influencers. And working with those groups of culture influencers that are diverse throughout the organization from all different departments, you know, we have seen upticks in requests and questions and more, you know, some work. And yeah, we're in a position where we're growing, we're expanding, and our capacity and our capability to help organizations through this time is increasing.
And see, that makes perfect sense to me. I mean, as mm-hmm. everything kind of changes and implodes around us, it's a very smart thing to do to find somebody mm-hmm. or an organization, a person, a consultant, whoever it needs to be, whatever your needs are, find somebody who can you can use as a, you know, a sound box. And because, like, we can get yeah. caught up in our own thoughts, and that's a dangerous place to be. You do not want to poke around in my head on a bad day. It's I don't even want to poke around in there. So it's like, no, run. And unfortunately, you know, so many people are so worried and so caught up in, oh my God, that they're in an echo chamber of their own making. And I would suggest to anybody who's listening to us that you find somebody or several somebodies or a company who can actually get you out of your mindset and get you moving into some place that's going to help you and your employees and your customers, consumers.
Yeah, you know, Denise, and a lot of organizations right now do, you know, you use the word consulting or you use the word outside or something like that, and they want to attach dollar signs to that. And most all of our engagements and our client relationships have started with a simple idea sharing session and you know, just a conversation like you and I are having to see if there's something the organization can bring to the table. And I got to tell you, that doesn't cost a dime. And
exactly.
And our approach and our methodology at Ideal Outcomes is not to try to come into an organization and fix cultural issues, but to be a resource and a guide to put tools and templates and resources and behavior change in the hands of leaders and culture influencers for this culture change to be done organically. Right. If you're looking for a company to come in and fix my culture, they're going to come in and look at strategy and mission and vision and values, and we do some of that stuff too. And then they're going to roll out a plan and they're going to execute it and everything. And it's got a high probability of being flavor of the month. We'd rather work with those culture influencers and have that type of cultural growth and cultural change done from an organic level, you know, being a resource and a guide. And it does. And most of our engagements start with conversations like you and I are having about someone's organization and what's going on and just doing some idea sharing. And if it goes from there, that's great.
I do the same. Yeah, I do more consulting with my clients than anything, probably.
Yeah.
It's not factored into the project cost. It's not packaged into the retainer cost. But it's mandatory. I have to know what they're thinking. I have to know where I can be of assistance. I mean, it's just you have to speak with people. It's so important. Now, Jason, you've used the term culture influencer a couple of times. What is that exactly?
If you take a look at your organization and your people within the organization at all ranks, all levels, from individual contributors to executives, you could fairly quickly identify individuals that have influence on the organizational culture.
Oh.
The energetic ones, the influencer ones, the excited people, the true stewards of your company, the people that are really coming to work every day because they believe in the vision and the mission and where you're going. Right? The people that influence the other people within your organization, and they're alive throughout the entire organization. I think our belief is that, you know, if you really want to address, you know, organizational culture or really want to tweak or evolve your organizational culture, you have to involve people from the entire organization. Right? It can't come from one level and one group. So this is culture influencers are a device group of people that come from a lot of different perspectives that have influence on the people around them.
That makes perfect sense to me. I'm on page 36 of your book. I'm looking, I told you I had it. I moved the cat off. Culture and engagement. And it starts out, let's look briefly at the relationship between culture, engagement, and performance. And those are all three words. I mean, those are key words that everybody's, they understand those words. They may not understand them all together, though. So let's talk a bit about that.
Okay. Well, and I think they're all interlinked, right? And an engaged engagement has to do with the level of commitment and effort and extra that an individual contributor or an employee, you know, going that extra mile within the organization. Highly engaged employees outperform just satisfied employees. There's level, yeah, I'm satisfied with my job. I like my pay. My benefits are good. That's satisfaction. Engagement is, I love my company. I believe in what they're doing. I believe in what we do for, you know, our community, our customers. I value our customer relationships. That's an engaged employee. Right, that level of engagement is critical to the organizational culture. You're never going to have a dynamic, really successful organizational culture unless you have engaged employees. And those two things together drive performance, drive company performance. I mean, there are studies and studies and studies, and they're getting done and redone, and they're continuous studies about the ROI of culture and engaged employees. I mean, if you Google it, you're going to get over a million, you know, responses and documents and reports. So that having that engaged workforce is a key element of a high-performing culture. Those two things together are going to create company performance. Does that help? Does that answer your question, Denise?
It does. And, yeah, it really does. Because I think a lot of people will pick a spot. You know, we're going to be really engaged, or we're going to be really focused on performance instead of going, you know, there's a lot of qualities that happen in a good marriage or a good relationship.
Yeah.
Why are we picking one thing to focus on?
Yep, for sure. Yeah.
Okay, so you talk, too, about the Trader Joe's difference. I have to admit, I've never been in a Trader Joe's. I think it's a grocery store, right? I'm not sure.
It is a grocery store for sure. Yep. And Trader Joe's has the following. I mean, the people that shop at Trader Joe's are true believers and followers Trader Joe's and their philosophy. And it's a proven statement, and it's, you know, their CEO at Trader Joe's had once said, or former CEO once said, that, you know, we bring you on, you run through training, you get, you know, you've got your first 30 days here. If you're not having fun, if you're not enjoying being a part of the Trader Joe family, then you should go elsewhere, because we want to have an element of experience, you know, not amongst just our workforce, but also for our customers. I mean, Trader Joe's is a unique grocery store. And Trader Joe's is also very realistic that, you know, we are a grocery store. There's a lot of people, there's a lot of companies that do the exact same thing that we do, sell groceries, but there's not a company out there that will do it or can do it the same way we do it. And that links directly to the type of culture and atmosphere that they create for their employees that then gets transferred and driven to their customers. And their customers are very loyal customers.
We don't have them in this part of the country. And I've heard of them, but I know my friends and family in other parts of the country are like, oh, you've never been to a Trader Joe's? Like, it's Disneyland. Like, okay, I will go to a state and go to a Trader Joe's one day.
Yeah.
Not today, but
and
soon.
That is, Denise, that's a perfect example. I mean, when you talk to somebody about grocery stores or when that topic comes up, I mean, more often than not, you're going to hear Trader Joe's. You've got to go check it out. I mean, because it truly is a customer experience. They're an experienced grocery store, and they do have those loyal customers. And it all relates to culture. It's a purposeful, deliberate, authentic process. And I love that. That's why I, talk about them a little bit.
Now, what happens when we have a store like that? It's a local grocery store chain. It's a family chain. And up until 2 weeks ago, it was my favorite grocery store in the world. It was wonderful. They sourced, we're 15 miles from the Gulf as the crow flies, and they have their own boats. They bring in shrimp, they bring in crabs, they bring in local farmers who bring in their cucumbers and tomatoes. It's a wonderful store until I walked in, and it really bothered me that they let this happen, but I would have thought they had much better training. So this is I want to know if they can save this, because I don't know that I'll be going back. I was that irritated. But, I walked in. I was coming from my vet's office. I didn't have a mask on. I've never worn a mask there. In fact, I'm out so rarely. And the part of the country that I live in, we're not sick here. And this, I'm going to call him Uncle Bob. We all have the Uncle Bob character that nobody wants at the family reunion because he's an ass coming and going. He's just not a nice guy. And, I'm strolling in the doors and Uncle Bob is hollering at me through his mask. And I said, I'm sorry, I don't understand what you're saying. He's waving a mask at me with his ungloved fingers. So the irony escaped him. And he's hollering, and me being a Southern Belle, I decided to have fun with him. I knew exactly what he was saying, but on the fourth time, I said, I'm sorry, sir, I can't understand you with that mask on. He rips it off, gets in my face, and says, you can't go in there without a mask. Don't tell me what to do. Seriously, don't. And especially if you're an Uncle Bob, it's a bad idea. So I said, no, I'm not going to wear your mask, but thank you for asking. And I kept on going. And he's like, look, if looks could kill, I would have at least been underneath the watermelons passed out. I mean, he wanted me gone. And I wasn't even being rude to him. So that was hurdle number one. And I can't wear a mask. I mean, I just can't. And I'm not going to go into the reasons why, but it's not an option for me. So he must have run to a phone and called the manager. And when you go through this store, you have to go through the bakery, then you go through the deli, then you go through the vegetables, and then you make it to the eggs. It's a bit of a jaunt. And out of the corner of my eye, I caught this very large man. I mean, he was 350 on the hoof if he was a pound, chasing after me with his mask, bellowing, ma'am, ma'am. And I thought, he could use some exercise. So I took him all the way to the other side of the store in the frozen food section. And he's bellowing at me, and he's, carting this big old buggy behind him of stuff that was supposed to go back to the back of the store, I reckon. And I finally stopped deliberately in a nest of his employees. And they all had the UN plastic masks on and, looked like they were about to pull an Uzi on. It was just bizarre. And look, this has been going on since what, February, March? None of this has ever happened before. So I finally turned around. I said, are you hollering at me? And he said, you can't be in here without a mask. I said, I'm in here. I've been in here for, 10 minutes. I'm not sure what the problem is. Well, you can't be in here. It's a law. I said, no, sir, it's not a law. And he's just getting redder and madder and sweatier by the moment. And I'm getting quieter and sweeter because that's what Southern women do. And I mean, and I won't bore you with the whole tale, but all of his employees are watching him just have this meltdown. And he's like, well, do you have a medical condition? I said, you can't ask me anything that has to do with HIPAA. Well, you can't be in here unless you have a medical condition. I said, well, if that's what it takes, make it so. I never said I did or didn't. Yeah. And he finally stomps off and he stops to turn around and bellow again. I'm just trying to do my job. And I looked at his employees and I looked at him and I said, well, if this is how you're modeling how to treat customers, you are doing a slap up job. Yeah. And, I was really miffed at that point. So I spent $16.49. It took me about an hour to do that. I went down every aisle two or three times just for the fun of it. They should have never treated me or anybody else. Like, that's my point. It's not me being cranky and bitchy, which I was. But a store that had such a, in my opinion, the best culture ever lost it in one day.
Yeah, and that
in one day,
is,
that's all it took.
That is that is such an appropriate, I would say, relevant story in today's world in any industry, because a company is made up and a company culture is made up of people. And
exactly, and two boy, people and, basically assaulted me, yelling at me, like, "Dude, I don't think you know what you're doing. What are you doing?"
Yeah, and you know, this is a when you hire, you bring on people. You know, you don't you as a leader or frontline leader, it is important to understand, you know, what people value. I mean, if it you know, it's not a law. If it's business regulation, I don't know all those circumstances.
Exactly.
But you know, you've got to have the right people in the right place. I think ultimately, any culture, whatever business you're in, flows over into a customer experience. And you know, at the end of the day, you take your customers away, you don't have a business.
That's
and
exactly
I don't know
right.
I don't know of a business that survives without customers. So.
No.
And understanding the relationship between people and what they value and the situation we're working in. And right now, there's such a high element of fear that we've never had before on an individual level. And you're seeing that school systems, grocery stores, airlines.
Oh, yeah.
These are the things we're, you know, talking about every day. Yeah. But that story is just a perfect story that indicates the difference in people's beliefs and expectations. And when they're way far apart, there's a lot of situations where they're aligned also. And it, you know, it's fascinating. It really is a fascinating time.
There were so many different ways they could have handled it, but they both attempted to demand that I do what they wanted me to do. Yeah. I felt very accosted, but you know, I'm not one of those people who backs up. I'm like, really? Come on, let's go.
Sure.
You probably figured that out already.
Yep.
But
well,
I did notice as I was going up and down the aisles very slowly, just enjoying myself because I'm a mean girl, that there were no other customers. I spotted maybe two other customers in the store. And later, after I got over... what the heck was that? It occurred to me that I probably wasn't the first person this had happened to. And other people were like, see ya. Now, I don't know for a fact, but I don't think that too many people would have tolerated that.
Yeah. No, that approach is not, you know, it's not going to drive, it's not going to drive a culture. It's a degree a lot higher, but how frustrating are you when you call into a customer service line or things like that, and ultimately the answer that everyone wants to give is, you know, that's not our policy, or policy says. I mean, you know, when you get into a customer service situation and all the other person wants to do is read policy to you and not listen and understand the situation, you get conflict. And you walk away with a terrible customer service experience.
And that's exactly right. And I think a lot of people are finally kind of twigging to the idea that customer service and customer experience are two very different things.
Yeah, like
very
sure.
different things. And the customer experience that I experienced in this store, which really was upsetting because I love that store. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
Everything is fresh. I can pick, shrimping. I could go shrimping and pick up heads on shrimp for $4.99 a pound. I went out and I sourced my food. Like, darn, it's a good thing I have plenty in the freezer, right?
I want to go shopping there, but at some point, because that's awesome.
It is. I'll take pictures of, look, $4.99, I went crabbing, I went shrimping, look. but it was just so disappointing, I guess, because of the treatment. Not that, you know, I understand that that's their store policy now, all of a sudden. But, man, you better learn a better approach.
Yeah, you've got to be able to have that level of empathy, understanding, communication,
exactly.
You know, that type of thing, and the at the very, very, very beginning of this call, you know, you asked me to tell people a little bit about myself. And I says, I try to live in a world where in other people's shoes, where I try to understand other people's point of view. And I think that's a big differentiator in customer experience, right? Because not every customer wants exactly the same experience, but you do have to provide that level of experience, and you have to understand your customers.
And I think empathy is the biggest thing there. And if that is lacking in a person, it doesn't matter how well, you know, you can train them to, you know, kingdom come. If they don't listen and if they don't care, you got nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep. Too bad. Okay, so why did you start Culture Spark? I mean, what drove you to this?
A long, long, long passion of wanting or desire to be a publisher, to publish my own book, to provide insights and values and a guide to other people to help their lives and their businesses be successful. I have, you know, through my, all the way back to my college years and getting my master's degree and through all the different levels of education I've gone through, Denise, I have always wanted to actually write a book. And this, the process itself and the interviews and the engagements and the knowledge you gain by talking to so many people in your research was just so invaluable that gave me so much to give back to others. And you know, like I said, this wasn't me just taking my 20 plus years of experience and jotting down my ideas. This was based on hundreds, you know, thousands of people's insights and opinions and thoughts and best practices and successes. And other than it being just a, you know, a bucket list light item that I wanted to write a book, I'm passionate about company culture and people. That's the other thing I said early on in our call today, is that I think the foundation of successful companies is the team you build and the team you put together. And unless you have a process and a definition and a really good idea how to build an organizational culture, I think you're going to struggle building the right type of team. And it was just, culture has been a passion about mine. Teamwork has been a passion, building organizations, putting teams together. And that's what really drove me to go through the process to publishing Culture Spark.
Listen, I agree with you about the opportunities to speak with people. I get to speak with the most amazing people every Friday, right here in my house, 15 miles from the Gulf of Mexico in the humidity. And you know what happens? I get to become friends with many, many of the people that I interview. You know, some of us have become such good friends that we exchange Christmas cards. My cat gets a Christmas card from one guy. I mean, it's just, and you, when you get to meet people and kind of, you know, pick their brains, but exchange ideas and thoughts, there's an amazing kind of chemistry synergy that happens there. And I often feel sorry for people who will say, well, you know, use my scheduler, blah, blah, blah. It's like, why don't you just pick up the phone? Pick up the darn phone. You know, speaking with people has its own reward, unless you're, don't start out mad. But, you know, if you're starting out with any kind of good attitude, it's going to go well. I promise you it is.
Right.
Don't put barriers up and make people jump through your hoops.
Correct. Correct. Now you're going to have to jump through a lot of other people's hoops, but that's okay.
I don't always.
I'm just being light. But you know,
I won't. Sometimes I'm like, really?
Yeah, no.
See ya.
Me too. Yep, me too. It's, you know, but life is full of hoops. That's for sure. And I, you know, it's one of those challenges. And you know, even working with companies and leaders and you know, board of directors and staff. I mean. You know, that's one of the things that keep me up or that get me up every day is I love overcoming challenges and what entrepreneur doesn't. And I think, I think taking that on and, you know, putting that attitude hat on and having the right charge in mind, you know, to get through barriers and challenges, I think is a great quality in people.
It really is. I mean, if everything is handed to you or you're not feeling sufficiently motivated to get off the couch, I'm not sure what you're doing. Like, you know, why are you still here? What, you know, what purpose are you serving to anybody, including yourself?
Correct.
I'm not saying go out and go bowling every day. I'm just saying don't narrow your field so far that you don't even know what you're doing anymore. You're just not doing much. And in this fear that we're seeing and hearing, I'm seeing people retract more than is healthy. And that worries me a lot.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm seeing it too. I mean, like I said, there's an element of fear. There's an element of this is going to run a course, and we're not, I don't even know if we're halfway through it. And I think our environments are going to be very dynamic and very, very much changing rapidly. And I think people's behavior, their styles, their tendencies, I think this might even have impact on what people prioritize, what they value. This is going to bring a level of grounding to some people, and it's going to make other people a little more, you know, the other side. So it is a dynamic situation, and it's ever evolving. So I'm trying to keep my thumb on the pulse of it, to be honest with you.
Same here. I'm fascinated by how people behave.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fascinated. And then I turn it back on me and say, well, are you any better than that? You know, somebody I may have mentally criticized, and then I'll have to go, hang on a second. Okay, let's back this one. So it really is a great time for true introspection. It's also a great time to find other things that really do help you help other people. And I think that's why we do what we do.
Correct.
We really want to help other people. We've only got
ultimately,
about three more minutes. Exactly.
Okay.
That's exactly right. We've got about three more minutes, and I don't think I had the opportunity, even though I promised at the top of the hour, to ask you about common culture mistakes. What are they? What are some of the most common ones that you see? Do we have time?
We talked about some of them, and we talked about, you know, that ability, the tendency to micromanage, and that's a big one. I mean, you know, really putting your thumb down and truly micromanaging, you know, your key people, your influential people, your people of influence can be a big culture killer. I think another, and I write about this too a little bit and talk about this. Another myth is, or not a myth, but another mistake in organizational culture is leadership ego. And you and I talked a little bit about that, but I think every leader, regardless of what level they are within an organization, needs to check that ego at the door to a certain degree. Now, ego drives people. Ego is partially the reason why people hit a certain level of success. And I'm not saying ego is a bad thing. I'm saying in regards to develop a culture and a culture of people and performing people, sometimes you have to check that to the door and open yourself up, and it's vulnerability. And sometimes it's maybe the word's not ego, but to be able to step back and be a little more vulnerable and empower people. I think leaders that can't do that is going to struggle maintaining a really good culture. And I think another myth or something to understand is that culture is not a passing fad. I mean, this is not a check-the-box situation. Our workforce is changing. Our generational workforces are changing. The social responsibilities of organizations are changing rapidly. I mean, all these internal and external factors that are pounding on culture, this is not something that at a period of time, it's just going to go away, and it's not a buzzword. It's something that has to be in corporate culture, organizational culture, even small business strategy has to have a component of culture in it. And I think those are some three big ones. And the last one is that we talked about this too, about, you know, culture engagements and stuff. Culture doesn't have to be, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars, millions of dollars in investment. It doesn't have to be overly, you know, it's not a big line item on your corporate budget or your department budget or your company budget. It can be organic, it can be internal, but it's got to be deliberate and you got to have a focus. So those, you know, those are some of those myths or some of those, you know, insights or best practices when you're really talking about culture that, that come to mind.
Thank you. Jason, mm-hmm. where can people find you before I let you go?
Well, CultureSpark.io is my website, is the Ideal Outcomes website. So CultureSpark.io. I'm on LinkedIn, all over LinkedIn, you know, Jason Richmond. And you can always send me an email at jason@culturespark.io. And I'm readily available. I'll respond. Check us out on the website. Check us out on LinkedIn. Check out our thought leadership on all our blogs that are posted in all those places. And if there's anything I could ever do for any of your listeners, Denise, I'd be more than happy to do so.
Oh, thank you. Jason, didn't you mention, I think the last time we spoke, that you had something, a free download or something that people could take a look at? Or am I,
yeah,
am I hallucinating?
On the website, there are some free culture tools, some free ideas and templates and things that can be downloaded. And these anyone that wants to reach out to me just for kind of a free culture consultative conversation, idea sharing, things like that, please feel free to reach out to me and we'll schedule it. And, you know, there's no investment tied to that at all.
Perfect. And that's exactly how I think most people would really, really learn to appreciate what you offer. Yeah. People who do that say, listen, there's no strings. You know, we're just here to chat. Yeah, maybe mm-hmm. I can't help you, but maybe I know someone who can. Just be available.
Exactly.
And I think that's brilliant. Well, Jason, thank you so much. It's been wonderful speaking with you. Yeah. And I thank you for all of the wonderful tips and advice that you've shared with our audience. And I thank you for the book. I've really enjoyed reading it.
Excellent.
So thanks. Before we say goodbye, I would like to remind our audience to be sure to look for us in iTunes, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, just about anywhere else you consume your business podcast. Just look for Your Partner in Success Radio and take us along on your success journey. Thank you, Jason. It has been a pleasure.
Thank you, Denise. I appreciate your time with you and your listeners today.
Get your voice heard. If you would like to launch your own far-reaching podcast, contact Denise Griffiths at yourofficeontheweb.com and go to the podcast tab.